How do we start the recording?
All right, good morning. It's a little bit after 9 o'clock on Wednesday, January 23rd. And we are here for the work session with the county engineer and secondary road. Darren, would you like to start us out with some of the highlights?
Before I get that real quick, I just want to comment. We haven't had a snow like this in 5-6 years, and we're going to get 30-40 mile-an-hour wind tonight. So rural areas in particular are going to see things I haven't seen in a long time. We might have new residents out there, so don't be surprised if you get some calls saying our service is horrible. But tomorrow we're going to be out there with the motor graders, but we're not going to be doing the thing. They'll go right back in 15 minutes. So like, we haven't been there. That's what people probably aren't used to. So just don't be surprised if you get some forget calls already. And Lori's glad to get out of the office with me.
Okay, I just thanks Lori and welcome here, yeah.
We're out in full force. It's just something you have to see.
Okay, thanks for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just want to start out saying it's been a bit of an unusual budget year for us for good reason. I've spent most of my county engineering career cutting back and being asked to do more with less. This year was unusual in that we have some terrible amounts we need to get spent. Time 21, the recent 10-cent fuel tax increase, and then a few years of mild winters and low fuel prices have kind of increased our terrible amounts. Don't view that as we don't have a need for this money. The reason the fuel tax was passed because secondary road departments have really struggled the past 10 to 20 years on maintaining their system, so it's a really much needed boost. I'm proposing to spend some of that additional carryover money on some needed construction projects and some equipment, and we'll get into that stuff later. I will point out a couple things with our budget. Our budget is a little different than some departments in that we have a secondary road fund, and once money is transferred into that fund, it can only be used for road purposes legally, and you can't take the money back out once you transfer it in. I point that out because when we get close to the end of the fiscal year and we're running low in some areas, we don't feel pressure to spend that money. We know it'll get carried over in our budget for next year and we'll budget it the next year. So we don't spend the extra money. That's kind of what I care about. So that's both them too. I'd also point out there is some maximum levy, tax levy rate restrictions put on by the state for our department. But we also have the minimum levy rates that we have to meet in order to avoid being penalized. And that's, we have to meet 75% of our maximum revenue potential. And that's something he's always checked out for us when we go budget to make sure we're not hitting that 75. We're usually in the 80 to 85% range for counties. So with that, we can move on into revenues.
Okay. All right. Did either of you board members have any particular items that you want to talk about with revenues, or we'll just start having Darren kind of point out the
things? Yeah, so I'll start. Okay. Road use taxes looks like we're light there, both in our re-estimation for this year and what you're expecting for next year. And so just talk me through, if we're not light, so we brought in 2.4 already this year, I can't see a reason that, or an obvious reason that we wouldn't continue on the same path we're on, and so just talk me through.
For the road use tax, we generally rely on the state, trying to find it here. They predict, I think twice a year they put out the predictions for us. I don't know all the factors they go into. They track it through the DOTs. They have a lot of people that focus on that in particular, so we rely on that, and that's what we use for our budget numbers. I would say for the past 5 to 10 years, especially, we come in probably $200,000 to $300,000 more every year.
Right. And that's what we're seeing again this year.
Yeah. So I don't know if you want to budget higher, you probably could. We have always tried to stick with the state's projections.
I'm fine with whatever we want to do. I just want it noted that I think it's between $300,000 and $400,000 light.
So the re-estimated for this year is also based on the state because I didn't say anything below option sales tax. Once a year I get an estimation of what it's going to be.
Our re-estimate, No, they don't really put that check now. We just, how do we do that?
So the re-estimation, because you're going down, or you're showing it going down from the original budget, and I think that's right. I don't think that's what's going to happen.
Did we lower that? I don't know.
If you had 4.2 in the budget, and now you got 4.15 at your re-estimation.
We must have used what they re-estimated.
But you've already brought in 2.4.
And it's on track pretty much monthly. I mean, it's maybe a month behind, isn't it? Only?
Yeah, it is.
This one only shows the re-estimate for next year.
Did there happen to be some, or is there communication that comes with the monthly that says, hey, we think there's going to be less travel the next 3 months?
Just
pretty
much you even know what it was for.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we brought in 4.4 the last 2 years, right? We're on pace to bring in more than 2.4 this year. So I would suggest that our re-estimation, which it doesn't bind us to anything, but our re-estimation ought to be in that 4.4-4.5 range, and whatever we budget, whether we go with the 4.1 or not, we ought to reasonably expect that it's going to be more like 4.4-4.5, and then whether we plug it in or we don't plug it in, it just, you know, history is a great predictor of the future, and we're seeing pretty clear trends here.
I guess my only caution there would be the time 21 fund is part of the reason we've been seeing those extra increases the past few years. It's finally maxed out. They put a cap on it. And we've reached that cap this year for the first time, I think. And so I don't think we'll continue to see that keep on us. So
right.
It might start to level off a little bit.
So I'm going to reestimate the current year to 4.4 and just go with the 4.1 for next year as it's presented, and then we'll have to have this conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
And then I skip all the way down. Unless somebody else has something, I go to our transfers. I appreciate it. And so we plug in the number that gets us to, 75% of our...
No, I went with the numbers that they gave us this year, and that's last year's... Well, actually, I'm not really sure...
I don't understand
before.
Coming down off last year's.
I didn't either, but I put in what they requested, and then I figured we'd have the conversation and we would talk about what the maximum 75% is.
Okay.
And
so I'll just note that for the last few years, the board has tried really hard to recognize two things. One, we want to continue to increase our skin in the game in what's going on with secondary roads. It's one of our most vital services. No matter who's building the list or what their priorities are, roads is always on the list. And so we've been trying to increase the tax dollars that we're transferring in, and that's what these are, out of general and out of rural. And so this last year we went 570, I think, out of general and 2.1, I think, out of rural. And now the proposal is to take that down to 541 and 230. And it's not like we're at the end of the list. I mean, it's not like we've caught up on the projects we've got in. So I think it's the wrong thing for us to do to even pretend that we're going to reduce that.
So for the general fund, the maximum is 824, 858. 75% of that is 618,644. For the rural fund, the maximum is 3.138, and the 75% of that is 2,354. So you don't have to be at exactly 75%. You have to be close,
right?
Because overall, when it comes to dollars that count towards the 75%, the IRBM budget count, and the local option sales tax payment for the motor grader count. So that's 215,000 counts. So while I don't recommend going, way below 75%, if it's not exactly 75%, there are other things that count toward our DOT or state payments. our 75% local effort.
And so what I'm proposing for consideration here is that we take the 2.1 from last year to 2.2 this year, which I think gets us where we need to be, and it is an increase. And we take the 570 from last year to 590 this year, which again gets us close. Everything else we get to count gets us over the hump in terms of 75%, and we're continuing to increase our financial commitment in terms of tax dollars to secondary roads.
What did you say for the rural services transfer fund?
I'd like to see us go to 2.2 million.
2.2.
You said 590.
That's what I'm suggesting.
A guesstimate on what those other funds, you believe those other funds, the IRBM, that in local option will get us above 75?
Yeah.
I have no idea what those are.
So. Well, we think 259 or 260,000.
Motor grader.
For motor grader rent. Or for motor grader lease. And then the IRBM budget is a net of 100, maybe? 100,000?
Just for information, we do an annual report to DOT every year. And we have to calculate that. We do use the motor grader loss fund 260 for that calculation. But we do not use that RBM at this point.
You don't use it, but you can.
So last year we were at 80%.
We were at 80% last year?
In FY18.
I'll verify before we finalize anything that we will hit 75% with these dollars. But I don't think it should be a problem.
I don't have a problem with increasing something else.
Nor do I. So if they're okay, then we've got everybody on board.
I probably want to point out one more thing on revenues on the first page. Just roads and transportation services. See that $335,000. That is a reimbursement that comes back in from a bridge project. We spend the money up front and get reimbursed. We have an expenditure later on, you'll see when we get into construction, of $600,000 that we're going to spend in FY20. We're not going to get it back in FY20. So we have an expenditure of $600,000, but it doesn't show up coming back in here, so really our budget is going to be $600,000 higher. Our carryover is going to end up being that one. Yeah. Really, what the idea is. Not reflecting here, I just want to make you aware of that. So we get to talking about our carryover balance. It's really $600,000 higher. What it shows.
Thank you. I view this going to 2591 as drainage district services, and you've got that down to 40,000 for 2020. Are we just starting to get caught up on some of the miscellaneous drainage districts?
And that's strictly what we do for work and get reimbursed from the district on.
Right.
And we've been seeing that go down. We did have, when we have big flooding years like we did this past summer, we usually see that kick back up. We do have some big projects out there, so 40s kind of been over budget the past couple of years. So I think we'll probably hit that 40 this year.
Okay, thank you.
And as with IRBM, they do the work and they fill in. If there isn't money in that district, it doesn't get levied until the following year, so we're sitting on stamped drainage warrants. Which I did check IRBM, they have like 6,000 sitting out there, stamped drainage warrants, but doesn't have the money for them. Richland did 5, Richland 20, all of the big deficits. So I didn't check on you guys to see how much you're sitting out there, but there is some sitting out there that's staying.
All right. Moving on to expenses. Anything you want to particularly point out here on expenses?
Expenses. First page is pretty standard for us. The only big change is our engineering. This is an off year for bridge inspections. Just see a zero for bridge inspections. So engineering is down because of that.
Could you talk about the third item you come down, which shows us the 900, but the you're up here on the maintenance staff, secondary road maintenance staff, and it shows here over 6% increase. How do you attribute that increase?
Which one are you on?
I am on 1, 2, 3 down from the top of page 99, or if you're following around along on the narrative.
So I'll take a swipe at this
here.
It's because the $1,450,000 is only 95% of approved positions, and the $1,539,000 is 100% at this point of approved positions. But if we go to the 95, all of these salary items will look differently than what we're looking at.
Thank you. Thank you. The other piece too is we did some calculations that included all the steps. You may have some fairly new employees that are moving through, so
right.
That the increases are going to be more. And once they reach the max, then it gets the cost of living. And you had a lot of.
Yeah, you have a lot
very
of
very
individual.
Okay. Okay, thanks. That's it. Okay.
All I'm looking at is pricing was a circle at all.
Sure thing.
Labor
okay.
Size, labor space. That we don't have any big changes.
Okay.
I comment the gravel and crushed limestones item is down a little bit. That's not because we're cutting back on overrocking, it's because we're more efficient. We're up to speed with the truck and pups that we purchased. So we're hauling more rock for less cost. So that's an important item. We're getting rock on the roads. So I don't want people to think we're decreasing it. We're actually getting more rock out there for less money.
Talk about why shoulders and erosion control. Is that strictly a function of the amount of road construction you're planning on doing?
Shoulders is the biggest safety issue in here for me. That's the edge drop off of pavements. We've got some big projects like the actual Corey Road. That shoulder's really worn down over time. So we're going to have to do a complete re-rock of that. One reason we bumped that up in FY19. And then the erosion control item, the estimates bumped up because that's kind of where our FEMA repair money gets covered into for this past year. So that's the rock we put down because it was eroded off the roads.
But you're comfortable at the system. Going from 100 in your re-estimation to 60 on the shoulders, you're comfortable there. And then knowing that the FEMA money is in the 60 re-estimate for erosion control, you're comfortable going back down to 10.
Yep.
All right.
That takes me up to new equipment. There's been a question before that. First item in new equipment is the mortar grader and lease, and that's out of loss money, so we don't show a number in our local budget for that. The next item is the single axle dump truck. We focused the past 5 years or so on getting our cannons and trucks and pucks up to speed, so our single axle got a little old, so the two are projecting to get rid of the 98. That's about 200,000 miles on it, so it'll be a 20-year-old truck by next year. And then the next one is an 04, has 150,000 miles on it. Miles aren't the biggest factor on our dump trucks. The salt sand that takes such a big toll on those. So if you ever come out sometime in the shop, I'll show you what salt does to our trucks. Holes in them, we patch them up, but that's a bigger factor than miles when we talk about our trucks.
Talk for just a minute, Darren, about why you need a couple single axle dump trucks.
Sure. As I mentioned, the past 5 or 10 years, we're trying to transition to more tandems because they're more efficient hauling rock. We had more singles than tandems in the past, and they're overloaded on singles. The singles are good for getting out of farm fields, hauling dirt. Maneuvering in like for all the smaller towns we can get around easier, so we have a use for them, but they're not as efficient when we haul rock in the summer. So we're trying to get more efficient hauling the rocks and cut them back on the single axles.
Do you feel like your fleet, the mix of your fleet now is about where you need to be, and now it turns into real replacement?
Correct. We're down to 4 single axles now, so that's not where we want to be. The tractor replacement is replacing the 2000 Case tractor, and that's kind of linked with the rotary mower that's two down from there. The mower is going to go on that tractor. The tandem truck, that was our last addition to our equipment budget, and that was, after we're talking with Joe, that's the 06. We've been keeping our eye on for a good truck that we're about ready to get rid of, but it's always been a good truck for us that we can give to Joe, because we know we give to Joe, he's probably going to have 10, 20 years. They put their hydroseeder machine on the back. We take the box off. So we had an 05 last year that we didn't feel like we want to pass down. We had some of the issues with it. This one, we feel like it's going to be a good truck for him, so we'll donate that down to Joe to put a hydroseeder on. And then lastly, the pickup, part of replacing the 2002 pickup that has over 100,000 miles on it. I would comment on the equipment in general this year. Kind of feeling with the motivators too. The dump truck and the tractor both are telling us we need to order it now if we want to see it within a year. That's rare. So if we come out of this meeting with a good feeling, I might tell Andrew to go ahead and start ordering some of these. So if you think there's concern on cutback in some of the equipment, let me know. But we got to get it ordered. Well, we can wait a month until we get a little further on in the budget process. But we're going to have to order those prior to the next fiscal year for sure.
Are they saying why there's such advanced time needed?
I think it's just the economy has been so good. Just get behind. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Everybody's been holding on to equipment, and now they're starting to buy new. And so my preference would be that we go ahead and give you some kind of assurance that we're going to buy the two single-axle dump trucks, and that we're going to get the tractor and rotary mower, which I view as one in the same. You know, I view that as one, even though it's two separate line items. So that you can go ahead and make that order for 2020. But then I'd like to talk about the possibility of pulling the tandem truck and the pickup truck up into this spring.
Over the last 2 years, previous budgets, I've grown to appreciate the pulling forward, that tactic. So I'm fine with it. You recommend it. I think you have a very...
Yeah, so I want to hear from Darren if they're available and if we have money in the budget to go ahead and get those ordered and in yet this year.
Like I said, the tandem, there's no way.
The tandem, there's no way.
Okay, no. That's over a year out, they said.
Oh, I thought the dump trucks you said were over a year.
I consider them both single. Okay. The tandem are both dump trucks in my mind, so yeah, those are all a year out.
So
the tractor and the mower?
The tractor is also, that's one where it really started. The tractor said it was at least a year.
The mower we can get, but there's no reason to get the mower ahead of getting the tractor. So that leaves us with just the pickup truck. Can we go ahead and get the pickup this year?
Yeah, pretty sure we can get that one pulled up.
So let's pull the 27. My suggestion is we pull the 27 out. We ask Darren to go ahead and take care of the pickup truck this year. We leave the rest of it in as listed.
If you know we're going to get the tractor next year, if at some point we know, why not get the mower now?
If there's an advantage to getting the mower now, that's great. I have real trouble spending the money to buy something that's just going to sit for the next year. So we would get the mower, and if it doesn't have something to attach onto, it's just going to sit there. And I don't like the idea of it weathering. I like it to be attached and come in at roughly the same time.
Yeah, the rotary mower takes quite a bit of attachment work, so we're not going to hook it up to another tractor. So, yeah, it'll probably have to sit there.
The only thing I got is the 17.5 is this year as opposed to next, if we know.
Well, no, so you're saying this spring go ahead and buy it, and my issue there is we would be buying it knowing we weren't going to be able to use it for a year, and I think that defeats what we try to do. We try to pull things forward, but we try to pull them forward if we can actually get them and use them immediately rather than just pulling forward for a budget for them.
Nothing else then, just pick up truck, which you can get in this year.
Unfortunately, because we do have the room to do that with the carry amounts.
Yeah. So the 27, but then I would like us to give Darren some assurance that we're going to leave these other items in the budget so that he can go ahead and get them ordered so that we can get them as soon as we can in next year's budget.
I have no problem with that. The equipment ask from you makes sense and seem to increase efficiency now, you know, for the whole operation. So I would feel comfortable giving that assurance that we're not going to bounce them out when we start really bouncing.
Did you say with the dump trucks and last ones you're down to 4 now? So you want 2 more? Or some of those going to be traded?
All replacement.
All replacement.
None of this is new, but all the mower is. We had a rotary mower, I don't know how many years ago that was, 3 years ago or so, that got bad accident. Somebody rear-ended it. At that point, we switched over to some disc mowers. We're not having as good luck. So the rotary mower is only really the new thing.
Okay, so you're still going to have 4 single axle dump trucks that just be in good shape.
And I thought I heard you say getting rid of like a 98 and a 2004.
Okay. Thank you.
If we're done talking about specifics, I want to talk kind of globally about the assumptions you made putting this budget together and what might be changing based on the $7 million conversation that we're having.
Okay.
Are we ready for that?
I'm ready for it. I heard something else earlier.
So I believe that you put this budget together based on our existing 5-year plan and paying for our existing 5-year plan as it sits today. But if we pull, and it'd be one road project that we would be pulling out of it, how would that impact your budget, and do you yet have an idea of what additional items? So the whole point of pulling these 3 projects forward, there's 2. One, if we believe it's time to get them done because there's a true need to pave these 3 roads. 2, it's because we still haven't caught up with some of the bridge work we have, particularly some bigger bridges now, and some of the things that you have on your list in the out years that we would hope we could be able to pull forward and get done in the next year.
That's a bit difficult to talk about until February 12th. We have a workshop plan. That's where we really get into those details. I haven't looked to see what it have a huge impact on our program, so we could pull up more particular bridges because. Roads, you know, they go back. We're not going to fix roads before they need it to be fixed, so we're not going to move up
right.
What we call maintenance on roads. So we haven't really looked much more on paving any additional roads beyond this list, so that's not something that's in our program to be moved up, but we can talk about, you know, additional road paving too.
So for me, I don't have any other roads that I see as imminently needing to go from gravel to pavement. I think those are multi-year conversations. I think these 3 came into our conversation over multi-year conversations, and now they're in the calendar. But what I absolutely see, Darren, is that Story County fell way behind in our bridges, and we plucked the low-hanging fruit over the last 5 or 6 years, taking care of kind of the easy ones, for the most part, the less least costly ones, but we've still got some bridges that are in desperate need of some bridges that get enough traffic that warrant desperate need of being updated. And to me, one of the beauties of pulling those 3 roads forward, in addition to having those roads done and part of our paved system, would be that I think it would free up our 5-year calendar to pull some additional bridges that are in our wish list, but not yet in the 5-year calendar.
I see a benefit every day, okay, but I don't know if anybody else regularly drives out East 13th and then goes south and onto Lincoln Highway, but more and more I'm delayed by trains coming both ways at the same time. I've driven past multiple times of those spurs. All 4 of the spurs are filled, waiting for pickups.
And I guess within the last couple of weeks, I've heard that maybe there's someone who's seriously, seriously interested in one of the Prairie View plots, if you will. And so I can imagine what's going to happen there, both on Lincoln Way and just backups. And some of those trains are backing up. I can't get across 600. Now, I know it's not about me. Okay, but if I'm in there,
go down Dayton.
Well, actually, I do that now both days, okay?
It's only a personal problem.
So I appreciate that. Because I think what's going to happen is that ceases to become kind of a local road. That's what I mean. Lisa Markley must travel it a lot, too. Yeah. So I see it's not only a convenience and safety issue, but it's also, I think, an economic development issue if they start to get too far ahead of what really the routes can support for whatever industry they bring.
You know, you're 100% right, and even just in the short term, if you look at Veritas, if they get up and operational and they're going to start hauling a bunch of silver in, you're going to turn Old Lincoln Highway into a industrial driveway pretty quick, right, where you're always behind the turning truck, always. And there needs to be, I believe, there needs to be another reasonable route for getting from Nevada to Ames through Central Iowa. You know, Veritas, that's Old DuPont.
Verbio. So
Veritas is.
You've done it. I
have
you researched
Verbio.
That's what I
think that
I make the whole
silver. Verbio
is what I'm
interested
in. Yeah. Okay.
Verbio.
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I guess I'd just say with the swap that just happened, we were kind of able to get 13th Street into our budget without impacting the rest too much. But when you go beyond that, 530th and 560th, those two projects have pretty big impacts on our budget and delay a lot of other stuff. And there's parts of that 560 that probably wouldn't get done going down south into Fort County, but with bonding could be done.
Okay.
So would it be appropriate and a reasonable request of your time that when we come in here on February 12th, we got the workshop, that you in essence have 2 5-year calendars for us, one that has the bonding and one that doesn't have the bonding, just so we can see what the difference in construction projects, proposed construction projects, would look like based on the bonding versus no bonding.
I agree with that.
Okay.
If you can do it, and it'll be okay.
So the board did approve to go move forward with bonding yesterday, and Ethan, Jessica's request was to go to outside council for the road portion of it, so we'll touch base with Ethan and make sure that that's moving forward.
And there's probably one project they did include on that. Let's get to the construction side of things. You go back to the local construction spreadsheet. The number 10, the 535th Art of Iowa Trail Paving, that's another one. I don't know whether we put that in the bonding or not, but that's another project that just came up in the past year for paving that included in our local budget. That was a request for conservation to extend that Art of Iowa Trail. So just think about whether that would be tied into the bonding or not if we went that route.
So the $7.1 million estimate does not include that item. That's here in local money. So if we looked at upping on the bonding, we wanted to include that, we'd be at $7,325.
It's going to be more than that because we're
going to
include the cost
of
it'll be
$7,475
from
those regions. Thank you. Okay.
And the Huxley project, that's something we're currently working on the agreement funding on right now. That could potentially go up a little bit too because they're now, I originally didn't have design engineering fees in that. I was going to just take care of that. But they think we need to split that 50-50, and that's going to bring that to the board. So that could increase that a little bit too.
And it's important to note that this is just a portion from 210 North, And what we're talking about in the bonding would potentially include 210 south to the county line. So the, what we've got in here at 750, while it's light on its own, it's really light if you're including going south of 210.
Is that
On the construction spreadsheet, I also want to talk a little bit about number 11, the Hickory Grove paving. I bumped that up a year to get it into this FY20, and some reasoning behind that. When Time 21 was passed, they put some restrictions on how that money could be spent. And like I mentioned, it's really built the past few years, especially in finally capped. So we're getting $500,000 additional money because of that Time 21 bill that was passed. The restrictions were spending, they could only be spent on FM roads, corner market roads, or bridges of any kind. This particular fiscal year, we're light on bridges spent with local money. We're spending corner market federal aid money on our bridges. It just happened to work out that way this year. So we're light on local money for bridges, and so we need to spend money either on a farm market road, which we don't normally do with local funds, because we have a farm market account that usually takes care of that. So I kind of had to find somewhere to spend some money on a farm market road or bridges. The number 7 Lincoln 20 bridge, I bumped that up a year too to get some more money spent on a locally funded bridge. And there's a portion of that Hickory Grove pavement on a farm market route, the north and south stretch, about a mile and a half. That's farm market. The loop around the lake is not. That's a local road. I also want to put that in this budget because we had some extra funds. And we have very few locally classified roads that are paved because it's hard to come up with that local dollars to ever update that paving. So we have the chance to do that now with the carryover money, so I have no reason to put it in here. But between that and that bridge, it kind of gets us about $450,000, and we can make up that extra $50,000 with some other stuff we do on farm market roads, putting rock on and stuff. So this is the first year the auditor's also commented that we need to be meeting that requirement. That's one of our legislative priorities, county engineers, is to get that restriction taken off because it didn't seem necessary. So we're working on that side of things, but I do need to follow this next year. And I know Mike's looking at some interior part paving he wants to do too, so he can piggyback on our project when we're out there doing that. A whole letter on play too.
And it's in desperate need. Talk to me about Indian Creek 21.
Indian Creek 21, that is it's just a round pipe project. It's been in our program for a few years, and we actually had a fatality there after we put it in the program, so it's not why I put it in there, but I kind of, it's got the feet drop off, and so it stays in some reason not well. Yeah.
I have no further questions or questions about your local construction.
This is that $600,000 on the right. That's what I was talking about early on. We're spending it. That's under special category because it's swap money. We spend it up front and we'll get reimbursed in FY21. So it's not shown as a revenue, but we'll get that money back.
Before we made adjustments today, we were at about 28% ending fund balance. It's going to change. But just wanted to be aware of that.
Our projections with the proposed budget, we were up around 33%. About $3 million.
Yeah, I probably went through and put the numbers from HR for payroll and stuff.
And if I'm not mistaken, we've been much higher than that the last couple of years.
Yeah, we're
finally starting to catch up.
We're re-estimating FY19 right now because it's 4%.
Yeah.
So our revenues are about 7.6, and our expenditure asking about 8.9, so we're like $1.3 million more than revenues. That's something we normally do, but we need to start spending that amount down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do need to back up and discuss one item in particular, the last. Last page of expenditure, there's a uniforms item. That was the one item when the union contract got redone. That was left open for discussion. We need to discuss uniforms, how the policy stated. Uniform allowance will be approved by the Board of Supervisors through the budgeting process or a regular board meeting. In the past, or up till now, we've given them $500 a year for clothing and an additional $200 per year for boots, safety boots. That's $700 a year. We can continue that. I did do a survey of other counties, and we had about 35 reply, which is pretty good. And the next highest allowance another county has given is $350, so it's about the half of what we give. Most of them are $300 and under. So we are a little high on that. We, past few years, we've changed it more to a, we pay them the money and they are just allowed to show up in proper uniform. But I think a lot of the employees are seeing that more of a pay benefit now. So we cut back on uniforms, they might not see it as just a uniform cutback, they'll see it as a product pay.
You're saying they don't, you don't require receipts?
We do now.
You do now that just switched. So we've gone back and forth out here. So
and they usually just get $500. Now they actually purchase the item and get reimbursed. And there's a few of them that they get taxed on, like jeans or whatever for IRS regulations.
Right.
But July 1st, since it was removed from the bargaining contract into our handbook, now we're consistent across the county for all uniforms, and it's just a reimbursed. You know, they get a code or whatever, versus giving them a stipend is what they used to get.
I've always been of the philosophy is that employees should not have to pay for what they need to go work. So, I mean, hearing that the next highest is, what, $300 or $350? Well, if the boots are $200, that doesn't leave those employees much of an option to purchase their Jeeps and their Carhartts and their shirts. So if you're looking at lowering the amount, I see what you're saying, they look at it like a pay, but I wouldn't want to go down to $350 because I don't think that covers realistically the expenses.
I think $350 covers the clothing. What did you budget for the clothing?
$300 at. Well, we put in the budget.
$550 total.
We put 12,000.
And how many employees?
26.
So that's about $250.
Yeah, I think
I have
about
$300. What do we? Do you remember? I know we used to reimburse, and it was. I mean, they had to reimburse it by a certain time. Do you remember what they used to spend when we were actually reimbursing?
We've got a history on that. Going back to 13, about when we were doing that, we were spending $15,000, 12 or 7.5, 11 or 16 on. They were spending almost all of
it. But that included boots?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And our policy has boots separate reimbursement up to $200.
Because it's a safety.
So the safety, so they're not taxed on it. But then uniforms, it's whatever the department wants to budget for each employee. And they don't all, I mean.
But it's not really uniforms.
Well, the policy's kind of morphed over time. It started out as a uniform issue. We wanted to have some sort of logo on there. Shirts or hat or so required to have one visible logo, and so we felt like we needed to pay for those types of shirts and hats.
Mm-hmm.
And it's over time, it's kind of morphed into jeans, and now I'm getting asked for gloves, socks.
Sure.
And yeah. This office staff, what do office staff get reimbursed? Nothing.
And that's pretty typical.
It is, but I I'm just to think, clothing that you need to come to work, county doesn't reimburse all the staff.
And we do supply all the other safety tech, the best chefs.
So that's not coming out of that account. This is just the shirts and the logo.
The shirts, jeans,
scarves, winter coats and stuff.
So I should rephrase that. I think where you're headed is saying that a better rephrase would be specialized equipment to do the job rather than say what you need to wear to come to work. Because you're right, Linda, we don't reimburse our office staff for wardrobes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my point. And
thank you.
If it's something that does not require a logo, somebody can wear it otherwise. Mm-hmm. They're not required. It's just the county reimbursed for this pair of jeans, you can only wear it to work.
That's why they get taxed.
That's why they get taxed.
Yeah, exactly.
We back if you wore another
jean.
We've this past few months, we've had some bills come from 9 pairs of jeans, one person bought it. So that's kind of what we're getting now. But that's all right. They can do that.
Sure.
As long as the department says whatever you feel. I mean, I know facilities does their own as far as the annual amount per employee for the reimbursement. Been budgeted, then he budgets a certain amount per. And I mean, sometimes they need coverage every 2 years. I mean, it just depends. I mean, they come in and their winter coats are torn. I mean, how often we're going to get a new coat, even in other departments. But I mean, what we don't want is. Yeah, but before it was just a cash thing. Were they spending the $500? I have no idea.
So what are they taxed? Are they taxed on the logo apparel?
No.
So they're not taxed on the logo apparel. They're not taxed on the boots. They are taxed on anything else.
Anything they can wear, jeans. Anything that they can wear outside of work that doesn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are the jackets? Do they have a logo on?
And no, we're not doing logos.
We actually started taxing 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when we did a deep dive into IRS regulations. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty specific. Safety items aren't anything that they can wear outside of here. We have detectives that get an allowance, but they can wear that stuff. I mean, whether it's suits or whatever, that's why it's taxed. They can wear it. It's not, it doesn't say Story County Sheriff. It doesn't, that's kind of how we did that. I know we got some pushback when we started taxing, but we just referred to the IRS regulation that said.
So, not to get too far in the weeds on this, but I just give out questions. If something has a logo on it, are people prohibited from wearing it off work?
No question. We do see that.
So I'm in agreement that we should not fund, or I think what I'm hearing is, I'm in agreement that we should not fund people buying personal clothes that they may happen to wear to work, with the caveat that we need to recognize that some of our employees, their job duties require beyond normal wear and tear on things. And it's different for me sitting in my office and sitting at this table, the wear and tear that I'm putting on my clothes, than somebody that we expect to go out and crawl around in a ditch or do something like that. And so I think there is some merit to having an allowance for their personal clothing that we expect them to wear to work because we're asking them to take a toll on it. But I'd like to see us divided out this, I like the $200 for boots a lot.
That's in Hawk County.
Perfect. And then some portion, what is this? Right now we're 200 plus 500 is where we are right now, right? So I'd like to see boots stay where they are. I'd like to see a portion of dollars available for the required uniform things. Those are the items with the logo on it. And then I'd like to see an allowance that everybody gives that we just tax them on it for other items. If you want to go buy gloves, if you want to go buy jeans, if you want to go buy whatever. And what I'm thinking of is it's 222. And so it would be, so 600 total. So we're actually taking $100 per employee off. But it's 200, up to 200 for boots. We need a receipt. up to $200 for logoed apparel, we need a receipt. And it's a $200 allowance that we tax them on. So then I would change it up to $200 for other items that you deem for work, and we need the receipts. And break it $222, $600 total, and you need receipts for everything.
And we didn't put the maximum amount in there because certain departments require more. So when we did the county policy last year, it just said the department will determine that. Because I think department to department, you're going to have different maxes. You're going to require different uniforms than other departments. So that's why it's set in there during the budget or to the board. You need to have an internal policy that sets your guidelines for uniforms outside of the county uniform policy.
Yeah, that's something I've been looking at. We just read that, and I was like, well, yeah, our uniform policy is going away with the union contracts. We don't have it. We got to formulate one.
And everything's reimbursable, correct? And they have to turn in receipts.
Well, the internal policy has to parallel the county policy, right? It could be more specific in terms of the number or something like that, but it has to parallel that it's reimbursable, and because of IRS, certain things are, you know, you're going to be taxed on.
It would dictate what you're requiring your employees to wear. And if they, you know, like your mechanics, they're going to have something different, and they're going to have more.
I'm considering looking into some sort of uniform service for the two.
Uniform service.
They do get very dirty every day.
So
that's something that could be added into this. I'll look at that this next year.
So is it enough here, rather than to get into trying to rewrite the countywide policy, just to note that we've given you some direction and you'll do an internal policy that works consistent with the countywide?
Now I think we just need a budget number, and it's probably a little low. We go to 600. Mm-hmm. We might need to bump that up a little bit. I need to see that new number for that.
So it's about $461.
Yeah, I think it's a $15,000 line item. I mean, so if everybody used every dollar, if we went for it with roughly $600, however the policy breaks that out, then that's $15,600 if everybody took full advantage of every dollar. I think it's a $15,000 reasonable line item that we could get to.
Yeah, I think if you look over the number before I open one up. So I've got 106 on page 99. I've got 8,000 in taxable fringe benefits, which is the reimbursement for jeans and those types of things. And then I've got 4,000 in uniforms and equipment, so I have a total of 12,000 in the budget right now. Because I split them out based on how we pay them. So there's a total of 12,000, so we need to just manipulate how those numbers need to be.
Yeah, I think it's 10 and 5. If we plug 15 in, I think it's 10 and 5. And my theory there is that if it's taxable, people will just get what they need because they're not going to want to pay taxes. And they'll use the entire. And they'll use the entire. I appreciate your sign this morning. They'll use the entire amount that we give. So they'll bring us a receipt from Tyson's for the jeans or the car parts or whatever, and they'll spend $220 in order to get $200 back. Which is why I think they'll use the full $5,000 there. So that's how I came to the 10 and 5.
Double check on that and let me know if that's sufficient, okay? So I have a question about the McCallsburg shift and just the front of that, okay? Is there anything in here that you're anticipating to do, you know, within maintenance and repairs to do something to at least shore that up?
Yeah, that ties into something else. Yeah. Cover in detail, so I have to cover that section under buildings. I did budget $50,000, which is we usually budget $15,000.
Right.
The past couple of years have been much higher because of the new sheds.
Right.
So I have an extra $35,000 we normally do in there, and that's mainly to get a salt shed built, the Kelly shed, a smaller salt bin, the Roland, a
and then, yes, some repairs to the culvert, the front of that. We're still working with our crew to see if that's something they, our crew leaders feel like, they feel like they can do it internally, but they'll be digging into it. I'm not real sure. Crew leaders have been in that shed a long time, and some of them have been that same way for 15 years. It's nothing that's really changed, but it times needs to be fixed. Whether we can do it internally or not, so we have to hold on to it. We don't want to do anything that's unsafe for sure. Yeah. I think of that.
So I appreciate that. I just did want to follow up on that since I have absolutely no expertise in that area. When I went out, saw the hole and looked, and so to me, what it looks like versus what it's structurally like would be two different things.
Well, what worked out when you go out there?
Yeah, I did. I had Todd to come out and put a huge warning sign over it. Okay.
Another reason that's been delayed is because it's required to take the two doors completely off. You know, I can get out in the middle of winter and
right.
Shit. So we're waiting until the spring to come okay. That way.
Thank you. Yeah, we're in big trouble if we have these parties.
Other duties have the time, Boris.
That's right.
Report.
I have one other question, and just because it's been discussing conservation and then yesterday, or 2 days ago, facility, the radio. So on page 102, third one down, radio leak. You want to talk a little bit there about what you're doing?
We're currently just exploring all of our options with the new radio system. Our current analog system is outdated. We can't get equipment to repair it anymore. We've been feeling that for a long time, but we've made it through. But just as I said, we've got to do something different. Electronic engineering has told us with our system, they can switch us over to the digital system pretty much at no cost. We have to get all new radios, but they're leased, so that's a big cost. There might be a couple thousand dollars a year they thought would be increased, and then the radio tower was going to go up regardless we go digital analog, so that's going to increase a little bit. That number stayed pretty consistent the past 20 years or so. It hasn't gone up much, so we've had pretty good luck with that. So what we're debating is we're getting the 10 new motivators probably the first week of March, so that needs to have all new radio installations, so we're trying to determine at that point we want to switch everything over to the new digital, and like I said, at the lease, we're not really locked ourselves into anything. That's just kind of an annual lease. So we get back out of that. The new radio system, the sheriff's getting, I think we're looking at about $3,500 per radio. And we have 65 radios right now. That'd be a pretty high expense. Right now we're paying about $180 a year for the current radios we have. So to get to that $3,500, that's about a 20-year payback there. So what we don't have a good feel for is that new system. It's going to be a lot better than what we have. So we're not going to have a good feel for that.
You did.
We tested the new digital system. It sounds completely different. So that takes getting used to, but coverage-wise, it didn't seem any worse. It seemed a little better. But that's something electronic engineering thinks they can do fairly quickly. So it's still what we have to get. There'd be some installation costs. The wiring in the vehicles all stay the same because plugging the radios, so that part would be easy. But the new motivators we're considering. If that was the time we would visit or not, we don't have to make that decision. And then we can put the old radios in there and push it out a little longer so we can see how the county-wide radios go. But we haven't made any decisions at this point. The board has heard anything different. And at one point, 10 years ago, there was talk that we needed to be interoperable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that as a necessity. And we can always get one or two of radios using them.
Well, part of just a quick overview of the discussion we had was different scenarios about maybe the county buying a pool of them, correct? Residents, right? So possible, but then not everybody would have their own outside of law enforcement, but instead, you know, and some of these radios would be deployed as needed.
And I need to add something, because you're 100% right, but I need to add something to it. We also could have very easily have the capability to have a jumper, which would be something that probably would be maintained by dispatch that would allow them to pull. So we could use a standalone system, in this case for secondary roads. But if we ever needed to pull secondary roads in, we would be able to pull them in on a limited basis to everything that's going on with the primary radios. And if you combine that, Loris, with having a pool of fully functional radios, then you could see a scenario where we would very easily be able to take our secondary roads. So we have some kind of big emergency, very easily be able to take our secondary roads and tie them to dispatch without spending the, and I think $3,500 is light, without spending the $3,500 per radio for 60-plus radios.
Yeah. So discussions are ongoing about what the board will ultimately decide what direction.
So that might be taking one more step and having them be interoperable.
Having the ability to make them interoperable, right? That's a piece of equipment.
All of them? All the 65 radios out there?
So if we had this, and I'm not a technical enough guy to understand all of it, but if we had this piece of equipment, a jumper or something, I don't know if I'm even using the right word for it, but a piece of equipment at dispatch where they would be able to, in essence, tie what we have, in this case with secondary roads, what we're using, into their system. So it would be, it'd be like, I'm sure I'm, it'd be like holding two phones up together for the people on the other ends to be able to talk.
So would that work for conservation as well?
It would work for any radio system that we have, that we have the equipment and dispatch to be able to put them together.
I'm just thinking that maybe, I'm just trying to think how that might save money for some other entities.
Like the township fire service.
The beauty with the 911 system, and maybe we need to have, let me get through my first meeting of StoryCom, which is next Tuesday morning, and then we need to have the full conversation. The reason that I personally don't view that as a good idea for any of our first responders is the whole Darren's radios are limited coverage, right? Mm-hmm. Generally, in most of the county, if you're outside, not in a hilly area, you pick it up. But we need a first responder system that is good in every area of the county, down in a ditch, in the basement of the most hardened building anywhere. And Darren's radios don't have that now and aren't going to have that going forward unless we purchase him the full deal. I don't view that as a big deal for secondary roads, because where is secondary roads most of the time?
Out in the open.
So, that's the...
On the prairie.
Lisa is in high form this morning. You had your coffee.
Okay. And I think I would agree with the first responders. I mean, just by what they're doing, you want them on the system. But I was thinking, were there any other entities who might?
So I think it's a great conversation for us to have, and I'll just underscore that point one more time. There are places in the county, for sure, where Darren's crew has better luck on their cell phone than they have using their radio. That's not that big a deal. I mean, it's a deal, but it's not that big a deal. You have a first responder going in somewhere, and their cell phone is better than their radio. That's a big deal.
Okay, thank you.
And an additional information. All right, good. Yes, and I hope you're wrong. I hope that tomorrow is a course today because of the wind. Your crystal ball broke.
Only if you live out on 580.
Right.
That's where it's going to be all.
That's right.
So we're adjourned,
and what's your... I guess over here, I'd like to say one last item. I didn't include anything in the budget this year, but something we're considering. I talked to Deb about it. I went back and looked since the year 2000. We're down 6 full-time positions since the year 2000. And that was out of necessity our budget. Just, we had to keep that. We're at a point we could probably get one position back in, and the most important position we got rid of was our assistant, maintenance superintendent. And that is difficult for one person to do. We're trying to think of some ideas on a hybrid way they can do that and actually help out on the labor side too, right, Truck as well. Need that help as well. And the things have changed just recently. I'll talk to them about how we go, but we're looking at maybe adding a new position, something we haven't done in a long time. But I think it's our budget can
probably handle it now and probably time. So that might come in the next year, but nothing.
Nothing right now. You'd be looking maybe headed into fiscal year 21 or at reestimation.
I'd like us to have that full conversation. I would just encourage you to work with Deb and Alyssa to put together a full proposal. And Morris, I think you're on the right. That, to me, that conversation starts at this point next year, and then it can either not happen, it can happen yet in the 20 fiscal year, or it can happen starting in 21.
I'm going to go one more time. Anything else before we adjourn?